Welcome to the Pragmatic Podcast for October 15th, 2008, Rails for .NET Developers.
The primary motivation for Iron Ruby is interoperability with Microsoft technologies. Natively talk to Microsoft assemblies using the Ruby language. It's a really exciting and important project that's showing that Microsoft is 100% committed to open source technologies and also to dynamic languages.
That's Brian Ang, who co-authored Rails for .NET Developers with Jeff Cohen. I'm Daniel Steinberg, and this week, editor Susanna Falzer interviews Brian and Jeff about their new book. She noted the differences between .NET and Rails development and asked what .NET developers are finding compelling and appealing about Rails. Jeff answers.
One of the most compelling reasons is the Ruby language itself. I mean, we hear a lot about the Rails framework, but what often goes unnoticed is the power and the simplicity of the Ruby language. And when I was a C-sharp developer first learning about Rails, that was one of the main things that pulled me over to Rails was actually the language itself.
On the Rails side, a lot of people say that developing web applications actually feels like cheating. And that's definitely what my experience was when I first started, along with what Jeff said about the language itself. Rails kind of takes that kind of 80% of features that almost everyone builds into their web applications and puts it right in the framework for you. So when I was working with ASP.NET, a lot of things like the data layer that it seemed to be doing over and over again, trying to become more clever with every single time, was kind of already there for me. So it definitely felt like cheating.
There's definitely a difference of mindset and approach, though, as .NET developers kind of get their feet wet with Ruby and Rails. Can you talk a little bit more about what they'll need to change as far as their perceptions or how they approach development?
It's definitely a cultural thing. It's really the open source versus proprietary stack. So when we're talking about Microsoft and .NET, everything is sort of from the kind of web server to the database to the development tools are little pieces that sort of fit together really nicely. And they come from one company that is there to make a profit and there to make sure that you have the kind of most seamless experience possible with their products. Versus the open source stack that Rails gives you, you have a lot of different choices and they're probably not as well supported in terms of commercial support. Although it is very well supported by the community itself. So it's kind of a shift between having a big company support this application stack that you're working with versus, you know, having to look to your peers or look to other folks to find solutions and also contributing back to the framework itself. So that's a big thing is you actually have the opportunity to make changes with open source software. And that's a big change that I had to make just philosophically, in my mind.
You know, programming-wise, .NET for me was kind of like having a blank canvas upon which you could architect your application in any style that you want, whereas Rails really has a very specific opinion about how database-backed applications should look internally. You're not going to work with a drag-drop canvas where you can right-click and click some properties. You know, you've got to learn HTML, you've got to learn Ruby, you need to learn CSS, and learn about the MVC paradigm, which, interestingly, .NET has now added an MVC project type to ASP.NET. It's becoming a more popular way of developing web applications.
Well, yeah, I'd like to get back to MVC in a couple of minutes, but first I wanted to start a little bit with some of the basics, which is as .NET developers are starting to take a look at Ruby and Rails, what do they need to get themselves set up as far as tools, and how mature are those tools for the Windows platform?
It's pretty easy. That's one of the big surprises that people usually have is you see a kind of predominance of OS X and maybe even Linux in the Rails development space. And people kind of assume that Windows is kind of second-class citizen. But it's actually really easy to get started as far as installation and tools and so forth. It takes about 20 minutes to walk through what we talk about in the first chapter of our book, and just in terms of getting Ruby installed and getting Rails installed and setting up a database. In terms of tools and code editors, it's a little bit different in terms of what we as .NET developers might be used to. There is no comparison to Visual Studio in terms of a full-featured IDE. And that has a lot to do with philosophical differences between the frameworks as well. We don't find that it's as necessary to have this full-blown IDE type environment, you kind of tend to go more towards something like a text editor. Anyone who has looked at any tutorials has seen TextMate on OS X, which is kind of the de facto standard in terms of editors for Rails. But on Windows, we have things like a product called eText editor, which is very similar to TextMate, and Ruby and Steel, which allows you to develop Rails applications within Visual Studio itself. And then there's just, you know, when I first started with developing Rails applications, I was just using Notepad. Make that shift from the IDE mentality to, you know, we're just writing code in text.
Right. I imagine it's going to be hard for some developers to say goodbye to IntelliSense and all the other aspects of the IDE that they're used to.
When I very first tried Rails, that was definitely a hurdle for me, like a mental one as well as a physical one. Like, you know, where's my IntelliSense? One of the things I found with Ruby is that I actually end up writing a lot less code than I did when I was writing .NET applications. The complexity just isn't quite there, and I found that I was doing just fine without IntelliSense. But like Brian's saying, there are a number of tools now appearing on the market that will help with that too.
How about web architectures? Because ASP.NET and Rails have different approaches. How can we approach the Rails way and the Rails stack as .NET developers?
With Rails, there's a particular opinion about the architecture of your application. And for me, when I was working with .NET, I had started to learn about agile development, but when I started to use Rails, it really brought those skills to the fore. So being able to write unit tests, especially with a dynamically typed language like Ruby, is really important. Understanding separation of concerns among your components is a big concept in Rails. So you have your models, views, controllers, and these are all big components that need to worry about very specific things, and you don't want to get them mixed up. And that MVC architecture that Rails chooses for you, you even get naming conventions, where files are going to go, are all laid out for you. So on the one hand, you don't seem to get much choice, but on the other hand, it's very freeing because you can not have to worry about these little decisions and get right to the heart of your problem.
Well, yeah, speaking of MVC, let's talk a little bit more about that, because as you mentioned before, Microsoft's debuting a version of MVC called ASP.NET MVC. So it seems like some of the Ruby and Rails techniques, patterns, philosophies are shifting back the other way towards Microsoft implementations.
Yeah, I think that Rails and other web frameworks are having an impact on the .NET ecosystem. And the MVC project type in Visual Studio is a good example. I think it's a great evolution for Microsoft to be able to incorporate some of these other types of architectures into the .NET project types.
Rails definitely makes me a better developer, regardless of the technology that I'm working in. So when I'm working on .NET or I'm working on anything else that I might be experimenting with, PHP or whatever, the concepts that Rails has taught me, you know, that kind of more idiomatic approach to solving problems and to use stuff like MVC and the REST design patterns. And I know that in the .NET community, you know, there is this sort of alt.NET movement, which is more moving towards alternate tools, not just the Microsoft stack tools, to do Microsoft development.
I guess I'm curious, you know, can .NET and Rails coexist in projects? Or if they can't, what can our readers bring from their experience learning Rails back to their .NET development in general or their other development in general?
There's always the right tool for the job. And a lot of times it's really more of a business decision than anything else. It's really about, you know, do you have the knowledge within your organization, you know, to do something very quickly in .NET? They can certainly coexist, although I haven't seen a whole lot of it going on out there. I've certainly seen Rails applications kind of, you know, integrating with .NET assemblies, and we'll start to see that a little bit more with the increased popularity of Iron Ruby. As Rails gains speed a little bit in terms of widespread adoption into more enterprise-y type atmosphere, that we'll start to see Rails applications and .NET applications living side by side.
Well, one of the great ways that .NET apps and Rails apps can live side by side is if you have existing sort of legacy .NET applications, but you want to start to use Rails for maybe the front end. So let's say you need to rewrite your front end and you choose to do it in Rails. You can easily have your Rails application talk to your back end net services through either REST or SOAP. So you don't need to totally throw out, you know, whatever you've written in .NET. You can definitely begin to gradually add Rails into your environment and have them work together.
Well, that's a good point. And also, I did want to talk a little bit about REST.
I heard about REST first through the Rails community. Certainly, Rails was not the first community to learn about it or use it, but it was the first one for me that brought it into practical use. And the idea of REST is to, you know, think about using HTTP as really your basic model for how you're going to be accessing your web application. Instead of thinking about my web application as just a collection of arbitrary pages, I think first about what resources am I handing out, making available, or exposing to my user. And then I architect around that. So one example is that I like to give out is with Wikipedia, you might do a search for, say, Archimedes, and get the history of Archimedes. Wikipedia has pictures, it has text, it might have some audio, might have some video. So these are all just representations of the resources on that topic. And REST encourages you to think about what your application is providing to your users in terms of resources and not simply as an arbitrary collection of pages that happen to be hyperlinked together.
Moving on a little bit to Iron Ruby, which you touched on briefly a little while ago. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Iron Ruby is Microsoft's implementation of Ruby. And maybe you can describe what exactly it is and it does.
Sure, yeah. So the current implementation of Ruby that's out there in the wild is and what is probably used most in like today's Ruby on Rails applications is Ruby 1.8, which is written in C. The interpreter is known as MRI, which is Matz's being the author of Ruby, Matz's Ruby interpreter. And what we're seeing out there today are these kind of alternative implementations of Ruby springing up there. And the motivation for this is either the criticism against Ruby that it's slow, or for the purposes of interoperative with other systems. So we're seeing other implementations like JRuby, which is written in Java, supposedly faster and runs within a Java environment and interops very well with Java programs. And then we're seeing Rubinius, which is another sort of alternative implementation. And there are a couple others as well. So Iron Ruby is Microsoft's own implementation of the Ruby language. So the idea is that the majority of the Ruby features are implemented under Microsoft's dynamic language runtime. So the primary motivation for Iron Ruby is for interoperability with Microsoft technologies. So what we're seeing is actually the ability to sort of natively talk to Microsoft assemblies, but using the Ruby language. It's a really exciting and important project. It's showing that Microsoft is 100% committed to open source technologies and also to dynamic languages. So it is a very exciting project.
Have you noticed that the buzz around Iron Ruby has affected .NET developers' decisions, perhaps, to learn a little bit more about straight Ruby?
To the extent that Iron Ruby helps introduce, you know, a new audience to the Ruby language, where otherwise we might not get a chance to, is tremendous. And because when we started out with Rails, I didn't know any other .NET developers who were using Ruby, and it was kind of hard to get started with it. But having Iron Ruby in the fold with Microsoft definitely lends some credibility and resources for people to learn about Ruby. So when you're using Iron Ruby, you're learning Ruby, which can be used in sort of your classical Rails application or within your Iron Ruby code that integrates with the CLR. So it's a great way to get started.
Your book gives readers a jump start working with Ruby and Rails, but how about further ways that you might suggest for readers to start trying out Ruby and Rails on their own?
You have to just jump in. There's no better way to get started than to just go through chapter one of our book. It takes about, like I said, I think 15, 20 minutes to go through the first technical example of, you know, how to get the most basic of Rails applications going. So the best thing to do is just to go ahead and go through the very first example in our book, and then take it and then go ahead and build something that you've always wanted for yourself.
If you just want to play around with Ruby without, I think, even installing anything, the Iron Ruby website, I believe, has an interactive, I don't know what you call it, but you can type Ruby right into your browser and see the results. sort of like an interactive Ruby console. Also, if you go to tryruby.hobbix.com, there's also a number of mailing lists and forums. Ruby-forum.com is one where you can start to see what other people are talking about Ruby and start to get a sense of how to get started. So there's really, like Brian was saying, we just want people to jump in.
Jeff Cohen and Brian Eng talked to editor Susanna Falzer about their new book, Rails for .NET Developers, on the Pragmatic Podcast. As always, you can find more information about our books, screencasts, and training at pragprog.com. Our podcasts are at pragprog.com/podcasts, and you can join the discussion at forums.pragprog.com. The music for this podcast was composed and performed by Andy Hunt. For the Pragmatic Programmers, I'm Daniel Steinberg.